Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in central Iowa. I am your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg, and I'm here with Virat Duarte. Hello, Virat, and hello to you, the listener.
Hello, Ursula, and hello to you, the listener.
Virat, it's the last week of July, so give us a quick glance at what kind of weather we can expect this week.
We can expect relatively mild weather, although today and tomorrow are expected to be hot and humid, as it has been recently. Tomorrow we should see temperatures above 90. Showers are possible on Tuesday night and by Wednesday through Friday. Temperatures are expected to stay down in the low 80s.
Lucky us, Virat. You took a trip to the Story County Conservation Board last week with KHOI's resident naturalist Pat Schlarbaum, and you brought back a very interesting story about a volunteer-based project that's part of a national movement that is very timely right now.
Yes, spoiler alert, wasps are involved.
Friendly wasps are involved.
Yes, I should mention that.
So nobody leaves the show early.
And we will finish the hour today with a word and some tunes provided by our roving live concert correspondent, Ron Carson, who went to Shackstock. What is Shackstock, you ask? Stay tuned. Spoiler alert, Boone is involved.
Last Saturday, a memorial service was held at the Unity Church in Ames for Fred Johnson. If you live in Ames, you may have known Fred, who died on July 9th at the age of 72. He had a long and successful career in Iowa schools, serving as a consultant for the Talented and Gifted program with the Area Education Association, advised student teachers at Iowa State University, and tutored young people. He actually had a radio show in his younger days, and he was one of our volunteers here at KHOI. I was invited to speak at the memorial service for Fred on Saturday to talk about his contributions to KHOI. And the interesting thing was that at the front of the room was a large old wooden radio sitting on a flowered cloth. Turns out this was not just part of the church's furniture. Fred was literally inside of it. Of course, with a gesture like that, I had to rise to the occasion and share this with you. After the service, a number of us discussed the radio. So let's take a listen.
This is Don Withers. I was appointed Fred's guardian and conservator in his last days.
I am Heather Withers, and I'm the retired minister from Unity Church.
He had a prearranged funeral, and we're just going through the contract. And just idly, we flipped the contract over. On the back was this thing handwritten in, I would like to be buried in a radio. And we looked at it. I mean, this was not written in joke form. This was, I would like to be buried in a radio. And it turns out there's a couple other people who, in fact, had heard that he literally wanted to be in a radio. He had this reproduction of a 1920s radio, which I think one of the brands was Crosley. It was fairly big. It had a turntable on top and all. That had, I guess I might call it, a place of honor in his house or so where he could use it. And the minute we heard that, that's Fred. That's Fred. That's not a wild thought. He was very much into media. So we looked at that and we thought about it. And so right now, Fred's ashes are in that radio, and that is Fred's last wishes, to be buried in a radio.
So how does one put
a
person in a radio?
What they did, Fred was cremated. And so when they had the cremains, what he did, it was an old radio which had a phonograph at the top, the turntable, where you'd put the records. So he took out the phonograph, you know, with a needle, that part on the arm.
And there's a lot of space in there. If you can think of an old-time radio that has a turntable on top, the cover flips up. So the funeral home unscrewed the turntable.
And he carefully spread Fred around, and then he put it back in again.
And glued it shut.
My name is Terry Beery, and I am Fred Johnson's sister. It's so perfect. It really is. Fred would play radio often, and he'd read the newspaper for me. He'd play his little 45 records, too, and kind of bring in and introduce them and make me listen to his shows. He was about 12, I was 8, and I wasn't always willing, but he tried to captivate me to listen to his show. He loved to read out loud, and then when he would be playing the records, they'd come in at the right cue, and he was honing his skills. And so I think he's just living that moment. It's almost like every little boy's dream. I'm going to get inside and see how this thing works, you know.
This was just Fred, to have something like he wanted to be buried in a radio.
With the little tuners and everything, and it made a perfect urn. And I think it was his total love of radios. He loved all kinds.
It just seemed to make sense to him, I think, that part of his life, the broadcaster that he never did as a profession but as an avocation, that he could be buried in his wonderful radio. And I just think it's perfect. You know, a radio, especially in the old days, was a means of broadcasting all kinds of news to the world. And I think Fred had a message for the world, and it's still his way of broadcasting love and compassion and inclusion. Well, he is going to be missed by many, many people. And he was always teaching. That was his thing, and he was so committed to it. A lot of laughter and humor and punning. And a lovely thing is that, I don't think she mind my saying, is that Terry went and picked out a stone yesterday, Terry and Bill, and in the corner of it there's going to be a radio.
I'm Reverend Deb Hill Davis, the minister here at Unity. And funerals can get to you, you know, and you have to keep your composure, because you can't cry. And so Fred putting himself in a radio, for me as a pastor, it brought that little bit of fun to it, is just, to me, his last laugh. None of us are going to leave this service and turn on a radio and not think of Fred. We won't forget it every time we turn on a radio. Because how many funerals do you go to where the urn is a radio? It's just Fred's last laugh.
So you're a pastor. What does it mean to end a life with a joke?
To me, it means realize that our time here is limited and that what we choose to do with it is an important choice.
Do you think he made the most out of this memorial service?
Yes, very much so. I think Fred understood the power of a symbol and brought us together to tune into one another and tune into this present moment. So, yeah, it was very clever. It made it literally tuning into, we sang that song, Get in Touch with God, Turn Your Radio On, and it was like, yeah, tuning into Fred, tuning into his energy, and tuning into spirit, and that energy beyond us that holds us all. And we created something together today that was more than just a somber, you know, sad reflection on Fred. It was an energy that we'll take with us. So it is a perfect metaphor. It's just perfect. So there you go. It was a radio show. We all need our own radio show to go out with, right? I think that's the deal. I think that's what we need. So we'll have to plan that, Ursula. We'll just plan our own radio show. Signing off. Yeah. And we'll see. It makes me think, what radio do I have that I'd want to go out in?
I'm Keith Schrag. Fred was an educator. Within his particular area was gifted and talented children. Fred had a special gift for doing that. And I think that part of that was because in the privacy of his own inner life, he had dark areas that he was dealing with, as all of us do. But Fred did not let those dark areas overshadow and really cloud what his passion was in life. But he found ways to dig deeply into the fearful and traumatic areas of life, to find a way to get resource from that, for moving on through. And I think that his concept of community was based on the fact that each person brings unique gifts to enrich the community. When woven together, make an amazing weaving, and that's a sense of community. I think that was at the core of Fred's awareness.
Thank you. listening to a radio station where the mighty hosts of heaven sing. Turn your radio on. Listen for the call. Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
If you're listening, you will be a believer, leaning on the truth that will never fall. Get in touch with God.
Get in touch with God.
Turn your radio on. Turn your radio on. With God.
Get in touch with God.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
This is Local Talk on KHI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm one of your hosts for today, Varad Devde, together with Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for tuning in and joining us today. Fred Johnson's memorial service was last Saturday. Another memorial was held on Saturday that reached into our community.
Yes, approximately 200 people or so gathered at Brookside Park on Saturday also to remember and celebrate the life of hometown resident Georgie Tashima, renowned skateboarder and videographer who died on July 18th at the age of 27. Derek Seidelman, one of his friends and colleagues, has joined us here at KHOI. And thank you for coming, Derek.
Thank you for having me.
Describes Georgie's life for us a little bit.
It's a story of dedication and commitment, a willingness to shed inhibition, act for your passion, and not thinking of yourself, allowing people to become the people that you know they are. There are many things that I try to think of when we're trying to think about what, you know, exemplifies his life, instilling a strong sense of doing what's right.
So clearly this is somebody who had a great influence on you as an inspiration and many people, as we could hear at the service. Can you just give for those people that didn't know Georgie, the kind of facts of who Georgie was and in what context he was providing this kind of inspiration? What were you doing with him? What did he do with his life?
Well, Georgie, he moved to Ames from Washington State in our freshman year of high school here at Ames High. At that time, I just knew him as an incredibly nice person, a smile that could light up a room, an incredibly brilliant person too, had such a keen intellect, not only in a creative sense, but he got excellent grades, you know, was a person that had such a strong work ethic. Throughout high school, we came to know each other through skateboarding. And we grew really close. I mean, I described him to everybody I knew as the nicest person I had ever known, ever will know. Then, let's see, we would have been 17. That would have been either our junior or senior year. And he actually started up the skate shop right over here on Kellogg, where the Vinyl Cafe is now. And at that point, I mean, that entrepreneurship was remarkable. That was so far beyond anything I knew any of our friends were doing, you know. It was exceptional. So then after that, we graduated. He spent some time here, also back and forth out in California. But eventually, in 2012, he made a more permanent move out there. Began working for Vox Footwear as a videographer, doing a lot of digital media, advertising, that type of thing. Then, after basically reaching that level of success, everything that he had dreamed about, riding with skateboarders that he had idolized growing up, traveling across the country, going to Europe with them.
Was he a good skateboarder?
Absolutely.
Describe his style a little bit.
His style, well, it's really said best in the things that he would say, you know, this try, you know, I got this, you know, I have to commit. It's not necessarily his willingness to sacrifice his body per se. It's that drive that kept him going to get back up every single time. It didn't matter how long it took. He was going to get it. You know, that was what he stood up for. That was his strength.
So what I'm hearing you say is he was a demonstration of when you set your mind to something, if when you want to do something, that you can find a way to do it.
Absolutely. You mm-hmm. will follow through with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, clearly from the way you speak about him and what was seen on Saturday, many, many, many people stood up and spoke about Nurji at length. Obviously, the way he went about skateboarding and the way about being an entrepreneur, an artist, had a very big effect, and a friend had a very, very big effect on many people. There were people from all over the country at the memorial service. Can you talk a little bit about skateboarding and why it instills the kind of passion it does, and you know, how this blended together with Georgie's life?
Yeah, absolutely. The reason why I started skateboarding, and I'm sure it's one of the many reasons why Georgie started skateboarding as well, was that it instills a very strong sense of independence. And within that, you are able to do so much. It's very unlike a lot of other team sports. It's oftentimes, you know, for people that maybe don't feel as though they fit in, you know, they're just trying to find kind of their niche in life. And through that skateboard, I mean, honestly, anything is possible.
Is skateboarding a form of flying, or is it a form of running?
Flying.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. The feeling of not only floating above the ground, flying through the air, but feeling the vibration of the ground beneath you, learning every crack and pothole on the road, on the sidewalk, on your way to the skate park, your favorite spot, your friend's house that you're going to meet and meet up with them and go skate. It's a truly beautiful thing. You'll go out late at night. You can't sleep. You'll look up at the stars, at the trees blowing in the wind. And you feel at peace. You really see life through in a truly remarkable way, in a new light.
Well, thank you for that. Thank mm-hmm. you. It was a really remarkable ceremony on Saturday. It was a lot of people, a lot of really good food, a lot of friendship. How did the ceremony affect you?
The ceremony impacted me greatly. Obviously. I mean, the energy that I felt there was unparalleled to anything I've ever experienced. I will always look back on that day as, well, I can only speak to this date currently, but that changed everything for me. To see hundreds of people come out and to all be there for just one person, and he was the only person that could have brought us all together like that. It was absolutely remarkable. I mean, I try to describe it to people. There is one point that we gathered everybody together for a group photo at the skate park there. And, I mean, there's over 200, maybe 250 people. There hadn't been that many people there even, you know, at the ribbon cutting ceremony when it first opened.
Mm-hmm.
And we all stood next to each other, got really close. We started to chant, you know, we started to chant his name. Everyone was slapping their skateboards on the ground, raising them up in the air. Many of them had spray painted Geo Forever on the boards. Rest in peace, you know, all of that. And in that moment, he heard us.
Mm.
A truly beautiful thing, a spiritual, very powerful thing happened. A full rainbow then appeared in the eastern sky. That is a sign that he heard us. I mean, we made him proud that day. We really did.
That's remarkable. It's really remarkable. I saw some good skating there, too, actually.
Yeah, of course.
Any last words for George before we move on? Rainbow in the sky.
Yeah. In the last few days that we were together, he had a fractured ankle and was unable to effectively get himself to the skate shop as his family was out of town, too. He called me up and said, you know, I tried to crutch over to the shop, which is his skate shop, which is, I mean, it's impossible. He said he made it 20 minutes and had to rest on the grass. And I said, George, I'll give you a ride. You know, that's, I got you. So every morning when we would get to the shop, we would share a conversation about life, just everything. Having a philosophical conversation, the likes of which I really was never able to have with anybody else. With his newfound appreciation for life after his head injury last August, going through the rehabilitation after his family was told that essentially he was going to be a shell in a hospital bed for the rest of his life, his heart was so big that, you know, it should have been found in an elephant or something. You know, a mind so strong that it taught itself how to speak again. It brought itself out of that bed back onto a skateboard and was able to start his legacy, his skate shop. His soul is so pure, so innocent. It's just a truly remarkable individual. I keep on trying to put words on it, but you just can't. But if there's one thing that I could say to him, it would be I'd just like to share one last conversation with him. You know, that was what I truly enjoyed. It set me on a high for the rest of the day. I was riding a wave, you know, just being with him. He radiated such a powerful energy that you cannot help but naturally be, you know, pulled towards him. And that's what I truly miss.
Okay. Well, thank you. This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and we're speaking about the life and memory of Georgie Tsushima, who passed away on July 18th at the age of 27, and the world of his passion, skateboarding. Derek Seidelman has been here with us to share Georgie's memory, and thank you for coming, and come again soon to talk about the skateboarding community.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
This week, Virad, you went to McFarland Park with KHOI naturalist reporter Patch Larbaum to look at a very interesting volunteer-based project being initiated by the Story County Conservation Board.
Yes, they're introducing a new project to Iowa that is being used in other parts of the country in response to the threat from emerald ash borers.
The emerald ash borer epidemic is something that is on the horizon, so this is a timely topic. For starters, let's listen to what Susan Guiazda from the City of Ames had to say about this. It's a serious enough issue to have become a municipal concern. This is a recording from Susan's last visit to Local Talk.
Over the next 20 years in Ames, there is a plan to remove and replace ash trees with a more diversified urban forest as a proactive response to the emerald ash borer, which is sort of a parasite that we have.
This is an insect?
It absolutely is an insect. It's the larva that gets into the tree trunks and causes the damage. There have not been ash trees that have been able to survive the damage of the larva. And we are anticipating some rather devastating results from the emerald ash borer. It has not been spotted in Ames yet. It has been spotted near Ames. It's been identified, I believe, as close as 10 miles from Ames. So the city is removing ash trees in the public rights of way, which, just to remind you, is the space between the sidewalk and the curb. Those are called street trees or public right-of-way trees. And we're also looking at trees in parks to make sure that they are maintaining their integrity and that they're safe. There are injections you can do to ash trees, but it is ongoing for the life of the ash tree. And so in some instances, we are injecting trees with some type of protection that would last a few years, but it is only simply until we can get to those trees to remove them to get stronger, diversified trees growing in their place. We will slowly, year after year, take a couple of trees from a neighborhood and replant them in a staggered pattern with diversified species, so the ash tree removal will not seem as stark. We realized in doing an inventory of trees in Ames that we are overplanted in ash trees, and we're also overplanted in maples. So what we're trying to do is a staggered removal of trees so it doesn't look like places are devastated. A lot of those trees were removed last winter. They were simply just cut down. Mm-hmm. It's just a shame to see these beautiful trees, yeah. But we just want to be prepared, and we certainly don't want them to cause any potential mm-hmm. harm to somebody. So again, these are public trees and street trees, and so you'll see some action around town as they remove those stumps and prepare for planting of new trees in the fall.
If somebody has an ash tree on their property, are you asking them to look for signs?
As a property owner, you would want to make sure that your own trees are safe and that they're structurally sound, and maybe speak to contractors. There's a lot of good arborists out there who know some options. Obviously, we're encouraging neighbors to take some action, to look around. Ash trees on private properties. I have an ash tree in my front yard, and I honestly have not really decided what to do with it. It's not small, but it's not huge. So I'm just not sure what the best course of action would be. So I'm going to be contacting an arborist soon and making mm-hmm. some decisions on that tree.
That was Susan Guesta describing the imminent problem of the emerald ash borer, an insect epidemic that destroys ash trees. The Story County Conservation Board is introducing an innovative volunteer project in response. I went with KHOI naturalist reporter Pat Schlarbaum to McFarland Park Nature Center to find out more about this project.
This is the first time the Wasp Watchers program has ever been done in the state of Iowa. It started on the East Coast, and it's been moving west, kind of marching right behind the emerald ash borer. Biosurveillance is a way to engage the general public in doing citizen science type of work, specifically trying to do early detection for the emerald ash borer. It can be used both for monitoring the movement or the rate of spread, and for just in general early detection.
Neat things that are going on at the Story County Conservation Board. My name is Pat Schlarbaum.
I'm Varad, KHOI Radio.
We're here at the McFarland Nature Center. Amy, you're the resource manager?
I'm the natural resource specialist, so I take care of the nature part of all of the Story County conservation areas.
And Erica Eves, you're?
I'm the outreach coordinator here, so I'm doing the newsletters, website, our social media, and I also manage the volunteer program.
And one of your volunteer activities this year is going to be watching for wasps.
It's a new thing that we're trying here at Story County Conservation, but it's been used lots of other places very successfully.
It's a way to find emerald ash borer adults instead of just kind of waiting around for your trees to die, mm-hmm. and then you find out that you have it. Mm-hmm. So the wasps, Cerceris fumipennis, otherwise known as the smoky-winged beetle bandit, they use adult emerald ash borer beetles for their larvae to feed on. They will take an adult wood boring beetle of any kind. There are lots of different kinds, and emerald ash borer happens to be one of them. And they sting it and paralyze it and take it down underground into their nesting chamber and leave it for the larva to eat off of. So they don't sting it to kill it. They just sting it to paralyze it because they want it to be fresh for the larva to eat.
Boy, now a lot of the listeners are going to hear wasp, but they're going to have some fear. How does that work out?
Well, as far as we know, these are pretty docile or friendly wasps. They supposedly don't sting unless you really, really provoke them. We didn't know too much about them or where they were located in Story County, so we're learning along with the volunteers. But they're actually pretty distinctive once you get a hold of one. They're not very big.
They're about an inch long, and they're primarily dark. There's really only one band of yellow on their abdomen. And so if you think of other kinds of wasps and bees that have lots of black and yellow striping on them, these don't have that. They're primarily dark. The female does have three yellow blotches, kind of triangular shapes on their face. And so sometimes you can see that female looking out of the hole at you, and if you see those three dots of yellow, then that's another way to positively identify it.
Do the nests look the same?
It's a little mound, and it kind of looks like a little anthill, but it's the hole is definitely bigger. It's about the size of a pencil.
Okay.
But they're pretty low to the ground.
It looks about the size of your thumb.
Their sites are in compact sandy soil, baseball diamonds, soccer fields or volleyball courts, things like that. Those are good places to build a nest if you're a smoky winged beetle band wasp.
Right where the grass and the dirt meet. Mm-hmm. You know, right behind first base, third base. Mm-hmm. On the baseball diamond, and that's actually where we have found both nesting colonies are underground.
These are
underground.
Ground wasps?
Mm-hmm. They're ground nesting and they're colonial. So you'll have a colony of the wasps all in one certain location. So you are looking to be finding emerald ash borer adults that they're bringing back into the nest.
And those areas will be like hard packed. It'll be a typical place where these colonial nesting wasps will have holes in the ground. How big is the hole?
Not very big.
About the size
maybe
of a
pencil? Relatively small area can have a lot of different nests inside of it since they are colonial.
We actually just confirmed our first two nesting colonies in the county.
Oh, where were those?
Very exciting.
We found one in Story City, which already has confirmed emerald ash borer present. And then we found a nesting colony in Roland.
Are there other counties utilizing the Wasp Watchers program?
Not in Iowa that we're aware of. We're the first. We're the guinea pig.
Yep.
Well, you're the leaders.
Yeah, well, we try. We hope to work the kinks out of this program through experience and then be able to guide other county conservation boards or other agencies across the state as they implement this, hopefully.
Let's just welcome this newly introduced critter. People can learn more about the fascinating world of wildlife and insects in Story County. And now we've got the smoky-winged beetle bandit wasp that people can be on the lookout for.
So how are volunteers involved with this program?
So you find volunteers to go out and find the nesting colonies and then observe them. Sometimes the wasps drop that larval food. They discard it on the ground outside of the nesting hole. So it's sometimes as easy as just picking up dead bugs off the ground. Or you can use a net. When you see the wasp flying back to the nest with its prey, you just scoop it up with the net. The wasp will drop the prey into the net and then fly away. It's not a long time commitment. The wasps are only actively feeding their larva for about 4 to 6 weeks. So it might be an hour or two each visit, and you're only going to visit 3 or 4 times. We would like to encourage potential volunteers to contact us and work through Erica for the volunteering. There is some protocol set up as far as collecting and netting the wasps because we don't want to take too much of that food that they're taking back to their larva that we would in any way impact the nesting colony. I mean, anyone can go out and walk around in a baseball diamond and look for wasps, and we hope people do that. But when it actually gets to the more scientific part of collecting, we have some recording sheets and things that we would like people to follow. So we'd appreciate them giving us a call.
Give us a general timeline for the program.
The general timeline for the Wasp Watchers program is pretty short. It's only about 6 weeks, starting sometime, you know, beginning of July and going into the first week or two in August. It all kind of depends on the temperature and the weather and when the wasps emerge and lay eggs and then start actively looking for their larval food source.
Mm-hmm. So can a listener go to your website and learn more, or what would be the best advice to a potential wasp watcher?
If you want to get more information about the Wasp Watcher program, if it sounds like something you want to get involved with, you can either contact Amy or myself. Just call the Conservation Center at 515-232-2516. Or you can email conservation@storycountyiowa.gov.
And I Googled Wasp Watchers and got a lot of information there.
Yeah.
So that telephone number one more time is
515-232-2516. No scheduled training sessions, but if people are interested, I'd be happy to meet with them on a one-on-one basis when it works with their schedule. Just get in contact with me and we'll find a time to meet.
Yeah, that's Erica Eves and Amy Yoakum, Story County Conservation Board.
What other states have used this program in the past?
Well, Minnesota, Connecticut, Michigan, almost all of the eastern states. Yeah. And you know, Minnesota even has their own statewide Wasp Watcher coordinator. So some of the programs are a little bit bigger than others, but I think probably every state between here and the Atlantic Ocean is giving this a go.
Well, it's certainly entertaining and informative to come out to the McFarland Park Nature Center and meet with some of the staff of the Story County Conservation Board. Really tip our hats to all that you do. Thanks for all you do for conservation, Erica and Amy.
Thanks for having us on today.
Thank you.
We'll be sure to post a link to the Story County Conservation Board in case you're interested in being part of this project. At the end of the interview, I asked their staff to help us look for signs of the emerald ash borers, so we can be on the lookout.
There's a lot of concern about the emerald ash borer as it moves through different communities, so if people can do something proactive about helping to detect it early, I think that's very appealing.
What can they do if they suspect any tree has been infected?
Well, some things to look for if you have a suspect ash tree would be canopy dieback, which so on the very, very top of the tree, you would have patches that the leaves are dying or that they're dead already, so you just have branches. Another thing to look for is woodpecker damage.
Because they're going to be after the larvae.
Yeah, the woodpeckers are looking at after the larva. So lots of woodpeckers that have been chipping off the bark and leaving kind of a bare trunk. Sometimes the trees, when they're stressed, they start sprouting branches from the bottom in that effort to, you know, do the photosynthesis and make the food for the tree itself. If you have a suspect tree, there are lots of different options and people to call. There is an emerald ash borer statewide response team that goes out a lot of times and looks at people's trees to detect if they have them or not. And then depending on whether you have it or you don't have it, you know, how far the tree is, you might still be able to treat it if it's a treatable tree. Not all trees are treatable. Protocol, I believe, for tree treatment is that once the emerald ash borer has been found within 15 miles of where you are, it's appropriate then to start treatment if the tree is treatable. Mm-hmm. And so if you know earlier, if it's present, then that will help. Mm-hmm. I would recommend if you get treatment done that you call a professional to have that done.
This is Local Talk on KHI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. That was Amy Yoakum from the Story County Conservation Board on how to watch your ash trees for signs of the emerald ash borer. Let's round out the hour with this report filed by Ron Carson, our roving live concert correspondent. He was in Boone last week for Shagstock.
Scenes from Shagstock Well, it's summer in Iowa, and what better time for KHOI to send me out on the road to cover indigenous Iowa culture within the KHOI listening area. Were it not summer, it would have been the task of Susan Franzen and Paul Wearson to bring back a story from a road trip. Susan spending the summer living on a sailboat on Lake Superior. I believe that she has a summer job as a pirate. Susan told me before she left that she'd bring booty back. I'm sure she will. But for now, this is my road trip, and here is my report. This field recording all started with a Facebook event invitation. Obsidian's Dream presents Shag Sock 2015, The Fook Awakens. Popular local band Obsidian's Dream, who has been keeping the jam band scene alive in this area for 11 years, was throwing a music festival in a rural Boone setting. Fook is Mike LaRue. He's the lead guitarist of the group, and keyboardist Dean Erickson originates the Star Wars theme titles for these events. Some of you have never heard of this phenomenon known as Shagstock, so let me explain. Shagstock is a grassroots music festival hosted by Shaggy, which is Chris Zeitler, and his band Obsidian's Dream. He lives in this rural abode with his chickens and a woman named Debbie. And no, I don't know the names of the chickens, I didn't ask. He and the rest of Obsidian's Dream, that's Dean Erickson, the keyboardist, Fook, Mike LaRue, Bert, or Eric Carlson, and drummer Todd Cumming, put on music festivals there, and Shagstock is the flagship of those festivals. They've been happening for at least a decade, though intermittently. 4 years ago, Ragbri came down Nature Road right in front of this location, and so Shagbri was held. A fall festival seemed like a good idea last year, so enter Shagtoberfest. As I said, this is a grassroots event, and it's evolved over the last decade or so. I had attended and participated in the first two Shagstock events when there were just very few bands playing and the stage was nothing more than a few plywood-covered pallets on the ground. Since then, cleverly improvised band shells have been constructed out of scaffolding and tarps. More numerous and better bands now appear on the bill. So what does all this mean? We sent reporter Brian Dudley to find out.
So, Greg, what does Shagstock mean to you?
It means being very careful.
What does Shagstock mean to you, Rachel?
A lot of temptation out there.
Yeah. No, I don't know.
Hey, I'm a shag. See, I need a Greg.
What does Shagstock mean to you?
Now, we love Shagstock. Rockets of Desire has played here 3 years in a row. I played here, Tom Russell, at least once by myself. It was super fun. Loved it a lot. It means having a good time in the Iowa summer sunshine with beautiful Iowa breezes blowing and great music. Jam band, baby. Ukuleles. Rock and roll. Means a lot. I'm glad I'm here.
Mary Jane, what does Shagstock mean to you?
Well, some of my most beloved musicians are here. And I'd love to come and see and hear some of the good musicians of the area.
It means a lot to me because, well, my dad made this and we've been doing it for a long time. So it means a lot.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
I think it's just a fun way to just have fun time listening to music, I guess.
Yeah, memories.
Yeah, like that. Brings back a lot of memories.
Looks like you guys are having a lot of fun playing up there.
Yeah, we did.
Definitely.
We heard from Obsidian's Dean Erickson's daughter, Ella, and Fook's daughter, Cassie. Their dads built this. Yes, they did. And for them, it's a family tradition. Their group, Levitation, played a nice set. We will now play one of their songs from that set, Lost in Time.
Here's our first song.
Lost in Time.
Tick, 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 tock, staring at the clock, wondering how long it's been. Hours, years, decades, centuries. Lost in time, lost in time. Hours flashing before my eyes. Tick, 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 tock, tick, tick, tick. Tick-tock, staring at the clock, wondering where I am.
hidden places never known to man. Lost in time, lost in time. Towers flashing and crashing tonight. Tick, tick, tick tock, tick, 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 tick tock. Staring at the clock, wondering who I am. Wondering, thinking, but all I really know is this. Lost in time, lost in time. Hours flashing and crashing tonight. Tick, tick, tick tock, tick, 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 tick tock. Staring at the clock, wondering how long it's been.
Now we adjourn to the Peanut Gallery to take in some music from the Britches and Hoes Ukulele Group with side commentary from the Peanut Gallery.
Well, I better go record this because nobody ever plays this song.
Right? Nobody.
Nobody. Hardly.
It's okay. I can still sometimes get the words wrong. It's always like mix them up.
Rocky. You know, I believe they wrote this song. Is that correct?
That's true. They were going through. The band was having hard times, and they needed a song to help pick them up, and so they wrote this song.
No, is it true they had a little help from Bob Dylan?
A little bit of help from Bob Dylan.
A little bit. Well,
yeah. He did some started. Of the punctuation and stuff.
All the semicolons are Bob.
All the semicolons are Bob's. The semicolons in the French words.
We play ukuleles now. Well, that North Country winter kind of kept me low. Lost my body playing poker, so I had to hop and throw. But I ain't a turning back. I'm living that old life no more. So rock me, mama, like a wagon wheel. Rock me, mama, any way you feel. Hey, mama, rock me. Rock me, mama, like the wind and the rain. Rock me, mama, like a southbound train. Hey, mama, rock me.
Bob Dylan has not confirmed any involvement with writing this last number, but Britches and Hoes has been very popular in the central Iowa area for a while now. They are a big hit at Shagstock as well. They are granted an encore. Let's catch some of that, once again, live from the Peanut Gallery.
Some will win, some will lose. Some are born to sing the blues. For the movie never ends, it goes on and on and on and on. Stranger, up and down the pool in all their shadows, searching in the night.
Good job.
Thank you.
Good game.
Thank you.
That was Obsidian's Dream drummer Todd Cumming filling in on the air drums. Ukulele groups are typically short on percussion, so Todd stepped in. Good job, Todd. Notice that we caught the band's triumphant exit from the stage. We extended our congratulations, and they responded by fist-bumping the KHOI microphone. Good game, guys. Bands that played before the KHOI crew arrived were The Shawns, Boonshine, Speakeasy, and World Citizen. I've seen World Citizen before. They've been active for about 20 years. Time constraints caused the omission of the bands Obsidian's Dream, Rockets of Desire, and Strong Like Bear, and their hybrid, which was Strong Like Desire. The turnaround time for changing out bands was pretty slow, as you might expect for a do-it-yourself festival. So we left the safety of the Peanut Gallery to explore the Shagstock sideshow. Ample accommodations were made for camping, so we ventured to report on the goings-on there. Several people in a large circle were making their own music and entertaining their circle mates. We saw some activity by the side of the stage where Garrett Adams of Stuart S's was setting up his electronic music gear. Didn't get a chance to record Stuart S's due to recorder battery failure. The bands that played after the demise of the recorder battery were Stuart S's Mastiff, which is now known as Kona, and the Easy Greasy Blues Band. KHOI thanks Shaggy and Debbie for being such gracious hosts, the Obsidian's Dream Clan for building all this, and the bands that shared their talent, and all the attendees and celebrants for their openness and grace.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for really thanks to Shaggy and Debbie for having us all out here, man.
This is Ron Carson along with Brian Dudley for KHOI Community Radio.
And thank you, Ron, for that report on Shagstock out in Boone. You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in central Iowa. Thank you for joining us today. I've been one of your hosts, Ursula Rudenberg, together with Virat Duarte.
Local Talk is on KHOI at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. You can also listen to today's entire Local Talk show and all of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. There you will also find information about the people you heard today on the show, along with contact information and links to the people, places, and things we talked about.
Local Talk was engineered by Richard Morrison, and our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop. That means that you can learn to do radio with us if you would like. It's a volunteer show, and it is a great way to learn about radio production and interviewing. We'll train you, and you'll learn more about the community and love it more than you've ever dreamed of. We do. So if you'd like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878. That's 292-2878, or you can email us at khoiradio@gmail.com.
If you enjoyed this show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as audience is what makes KHOI possible and meaningful. Thank you for listening and see you again on the radio.
Get in touch with God. Turn your radio on.